Welcome to Shir HaKsava, Kabbalah, Parshas Vayishlach. One of the episodes in Parshas Vayishlach, which many Mefarshim speak about, is how Shimon and Levi take out the entire city of Shechem after the rape of Dina. And one of the things that many Mefarshim speak about is trying to understand what the justification was for Shimon and Levi's act. On the one hand, one might be inclined to say, well, they did something incorrect. I mean, after all, Yaakov Avinu castigates, you know, Shimon and Levi later on at the end, both, you know, in Parshas Vayishlach, you know, why'd you do what you did? As well as in Parshas Vayichi, Yaakov Avinu also raises with Shimon and Levi again, you know, how angrily they acted, how inappropriately they acted by destroying the whole city of Shechem. But even the objection of Yaakov Avinu, at least the way it's expressed in Parshas Vayishlach, is not a fundamental moral outrage at what Shimon and Levi did, but it's really a practical consideration. You know, you started up with the people here living in Eretz Yisrael. You know, all of their relatives are going to come and they're going to fight back against us. And we'll be destroyed, we'll be wiped out. You know, this wasn't smart, that which you did, wiping out the entire city of Shechem. So it was Yaakov Avinu's objection. It's not the way it's presented in Chumash, it's not a moral or ethical objection. How could you have killed the entire city of Shechem? After all, what did they do to you? You know, whatever issue you had with Shechem and with his father Hamor because of the rape of Dinah. But, you know, what do all these other people have to do? What do they do wrong that they deserve to be killed? So this is a question that bothers the Mefarshim going back many, many years. The Rambam speaks about it. The Ramban speaks about it. Relatively speaking, more recently, the Maral speaks about it. Many speak about it. The Ksava Kabbalah has a very interesting take on the whole episode. And interestingly enough, in the Ksava Kabbalah, there's actually two presentations of what's basically the same idea, but presented in a slightly different fashion each time. I'm going to do the second of the two presentations, because I think it telescopes and streamlines the ideas of Ksava Kabbalah a little bit more. This is Ksava Kabbalah to Vayishlach Perek Lamed Daled Pasuk Chof Hei. And in that pasuk, the pasuk itself says that Vayhi Bayom HaShlishi, it was on the third day after the Mila, the circumcision of the males of the town of Shechem, Biyosam Kalavim, as they were herding, Vayichu Shnei Vnei Yaakov Shimon Velevi Achei Dino Yisharbo Vayavo Aliyar Betach Vayarku Kozachar. On that third day, Yaakov's two sons, Shimon and Levi, took their swords, they came into the city, and they wiped out all of the males of the city. What's Biyosam Kalavim? When they were herding. So the simple pshat is that they were still recovering from the bris milah. It hurts. So why did they wait till the third day? Why not wipe out, you know, because the simple pshat is, you know, Shimon and Levi waited till all of the people were incapacitated. They just had a bris milah. They were still recovering. They couldn't really defend themselves. So why did they wait for the third day? Why not just do it right after the bris milah? So Rashi brings, there's some kind of idea that on the third day, that's when the pain is the strongest. Most of us probably don't remember. You know, have to go take a poll and see if that's what, the way the kid feels about it. But intuitively, it's a little bit of a hard thing to understand. I mean, why should the pain be strongest on the third day? You'd think the pain would be strongest right after the operation itself. That's the way it normally works. Yeah, so, okay.
I remember.
Okay, but you have another glass of schnapps. You know? there are ways to double the painkiller after that. So, in part, based on that, the Ksava Kabbalah suggests a very interesting pshat. We also call him, Shekoav Lohem v'nischartu ala milo. He quotes the Sefer Mincha Blula that Koavim over here doesn't mean they were physically in pain. It means that they were bothered. That on the third day after the bris milah, the citizens of the town of Shechem regretted what they had done. They were hurt, not just physically, but they were emotionally bothered by what they had agreed to do? What, we went and circumcised ourselves and got involved in this whole thing over there? You know, what prompted us to do that? And it was their regret over the whole process that triggered the reaction of Shimon and Levi. V'chein super b'sefer hayoshar ki yoru me'achem haknanin pen yovo aleim l'molchoma al asher ozu es dosam. So is told in the book Sefer Hayoshar that Shechem and Hamor and the other members of the city of Shechem became afraid of their fellow Canaanim. They were afraid that their fellow Canaanim would attack them because they had essentially given up their religion by circumcising themselves and agreeing to become Jews in some form or another. So on the third day after the circumcision had taken place, so the members of the city of Shechem changed their minds, and they said, as soon as we heal from the circumcision, we're going to go fight against the Bnei Yaakov, we're going to show them who's boss, and we'll wipe them out because they took advantage of us. The Dina, Dina, who was in the house of Shechem at that time, still heard all of this discussion. She sent word to her father and brothers. And that's what prompted Shimon and Levi to respond to the way in which they did. It was a preemptive strike, according to this understanding, that they were, you know, not just coming in and wantonly destroying the members of the town of Shechem, but they were anticipating, let's get them before they get us. Now this whole story, very fascinating, woo, you know, it's a total 180 degree turn on the understanding of Shem and the like, is told indeed in the book Sefer Hayoshar. The Sefer Hayoshar is an ancient book that records, it's a midrashic type book that records many, many midrashim or midrashic type stories that supplement the stories as told in the Chumash itself. And in the Sefer Yashar Parshas Vayishlach, we are told as follows. I'll read excerpts from it. But again, the Sefer Yashar, as the Ksav HaKabbalah very briefly references, basically takes the story of Shechem and Shimon and Levi and turns it on its head. So he says, the Shechem and Hamor gathered together the people of the city of Shechem and convinced them to circumcise themselves. Again, as related in the Chumash itself, Ach chidekem ben Pered avi Chamor. However, there was a man in the city of Shechem called Chidekem. He was the son of Chamor's father, right? So, in other words, he was Chamor's brother, and therefore Shechem's uncle. So, this guy Chidekem, the uncle of Shechem. V'sheshes Echov and six of his brothers, lo shomu el Shechem v'el Chamor aviv. They didn't listen when they had this whole convocation that everybody should have a bris milah. V'lo molu, they refused to circumcise themselves. Ki hayu dvar b'nei Yaakov nimas b'neihem. The terms that were put to them by the b'nei Yaakov that everyone has to circumcise themselves, those terms were disgusting in their eyes. In fact, they got very, very upset that everybody else went and circumcised themselves. They threatened violence. They gathered together Shechem and Hamor and everybody else and said, if you go through with this, we're going to wipe you out. When Shechem and Hamor heard the threats of Chidekem and his brothers, they became afraid. They became very perturbed about that which was said to them. They regretted what they had done. And they basically said, again, as the Ksav HaKabbalah says in a very, very encapsulated form, Shechem and Hamor had charata, they had regret. They said, let's go after we heal and attack the Bnei Yaakov. The Dino Bas Yaakov Shama is called Bar Moela Shadibu Chidekim Ve'echov. Dina, who's still there, overhears everything. She had apparently a maidservant with her who had been sent after the rape by Yaakov to stay with her and to keep her company while she's in Shechem. She sent the maidservant back to Yaakov and the rest of the family to share this news with them. And again, as the Ktav HaKabbalah writes, that's what prompted Shimon and Levi to attack the city, not for revenge, not, as the Rambam says, as the form of judging the city, that they're guilty of this or that or whatever it happens to be, not as a form of warfare, as the Maral writes, but it was very simple. It was self-defense. It was a preemptive strike. You know, we're going to kill you before you kill us. Now, that's a fascinating story, which again takes the story in Chumash and kind of turns it on its head. But, you know, the simple reading of the story in Chumash, there's no inkling, there's no hint of anything along the lines of what the Sefer HaYashar says. So, you know, Sefer HaYashar, if that's the story, it makes us feel a lot better, maybe. You know, Shimon and Levi acted in a way which is very understandable from the point of view of the Sefer HaYashar. They're really just protecting themselves. But where do you see the idea, where do you see the story of the Sefer HaYashar in the Chumash?
Well, not in the Chumash, but this does have hints of Mikilas Esther.
Right.
Where someone sends word out to someone outside the Sha'ar HaMelech.
Right, right. So it sounds a little bit like the story of Megillas Esther, right? In other words, let's get them before they get us, right? So, okay, so we feel better about Purim, right? But how does that help us feel better about Shimon and Levi, right? So, in other words, to put it differently, where do you see that the story is told in Sefer HaYashar is rooted in the Chumash? It sounds like it's a very different story, almost, than what is conveyed in the Chumash. Says the Ktav HaKabbalah, and here it's fascinating because we know that one of the mandates of the Ktav HaKabbalah is to try to fit the Ktav and the Kabbalah together. In other words, to bridge the seeming gap between the Torah Shebiktav and the Torah Shebaalpeh. Here, the Ktav HaKabbalah does it not just for one of the well-known Midrashim, but even the Sefer HaYashar, you know, which is a little bit less well-known in terms of the Medrash. The Ktav HaKabbalah wants to show how the story of the Sefer HaYashar is really rooted in the words of the Chumash itself. How so? Well, if he's there, right, the Ktav HaKabbalah, Ein kolavim dekro ke'ev haguf habola hemi chaburas hamila. Where do you find the Sefer HaYashar in the Chumash? Biyosam kolavim. Right? Because kolavim says that Ktav HaKabbalah doesn't mean, as you would think it means, that they were physically in pain after having undergone the surgery. The imkain, if that was the case, who told Yoser Haya, the imkainu, told Yoser Haya levne Yaakov levo alem biyom rishon lemilasam biyom hasheni. If you want to get them when they're down, in other words, get them when they're hurting from the mila, so Shimon and Levi should have attacked them the day of the mila, the day after the mila. Why'd they wait 3 days until after the mila? Ki oz chaburas hamila macheves Yoser biyom hashlishi. The truth is, it hurts more on the first day than it does on the third day. Right? Rashi notwithstanding, he quotes the Ran in the Sikh to Shabbos, where the Ran makes this point in a different context. You know, again, which is intuitive to us. You know, if you had a surgery, the surgery hurts more on the first day than it does 2 days later.
Well, in Parshas Vayera, when wasn't the third day after Abraham had the first mila, and we learned from there that it was also the most painful time.
Right, right. So again, that fits together with that Rashi. And you know Rashi's understanding over here as well. The Ktav HaKabbalah, or the Ram for that matter, again he's basing it on Ram, might very well say as follows. We know from experience when you visit a sick person, sometimes the worst time to visit them is right after the operation. Nusa, how are you feeling? What do you mean, how am I feeling? I just had an operation, right? So sometimes you give them a little bit of space so that they're feeling a little bit better before you visit them. So again, Chazal do make that comment that, you know, it was on the third day after the meal of Avraham Avinu, Davka, that it was, you know, the most painful day. But you can argue otherwise. You can argue that, you know, the visitation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu took place on the third day to give Avraham Avinu a little bit of breathing space, you know, that it already wasn't that painful on the third day. Right? But you're right. In other words, there does seem to be different points of view as to at what point the mila becomes the most painful. The Ktav HaKabbalah works with this idea that he bases on Aran and Masechta Shabbos, which again I think is the more intuitive idea offhand, that, you know, right after the surgery is what is most painful. Good, okay. Avol ko'avim dekra hu ke'evei lev. So in other words, the word ko'avim, says the Ktav HaKabbalah, doesn't mean when they were as where they were at the point of maximum pain, because the third day is not the point of maximum pain, but rather koavim means that they were regretful. On the third day, when they were feeling regretful, when they were feeling remorseful about what they had done, and that, and as per the Sefer HaYashar, they decided, let's go and fight back against these horrible Jews who made us, twisted our arms to agree to this agreement. It's at that point that Shimon and Levi came in after being informed of what had happened and destroyed the city. Ki chola mitzar v'nafsho avur dover shuneged ritzon onofel olav lashon machov. The truth is, the term machov, which is the same word as kolavim, in pain, machov can refer not just to physical pain, but to anyone who feels upset or psychologically pained because things aren't going the way they want. And he quotes a couple of examples. Gam b'schok yich'av lev. Even when a person is happy, says Mishle, his heart can be broken. That doesn't mean that he feels pain in a physical sense. It means that psychologically he's in pain. You know, even when, you know, for all appearances he seems to be joyful or happy.
The vod was yantam med.
What's that? Oh, okay, so we'll get to that. Kiyodatius machovov. Right, another example. Right, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go down and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, Kiyodatius machovov, because I know how much they're suffering. Now the suffering over there, yes, in part is physical pain, but the majority of the pain that they're feeling down in Egypt is the psychological pain of being subjugated to Paro and of being slaves, who are goshes tsar hapnimi, right? And it's machov really refers to the inner feeling of pain that that a person has. Or another example from Koheles, ki chol yomov machovim v'chaas in yono, right? A person's, all of his days are machovim. So machovim, again, in this context, he says, means that his days are painful. V'kazek kora li'anshei Shechem. That's exactly, kolavim is a good description of what happened to the people of Shechem. V'tchilo shom l'pituyei Shechem v'chamor lihimo. Initially, they listened to the enticements of Shechem and Chamor to circumcise themselves. Mechem das mamon mi'aru v'kiyam devarov. And they were so enthusiastic, they thought, you know, again, as Shechem and Chamor presented it to them, let's get together with the Bnei Yaakov and we'll be able to take all of their money, you know, we'll be able to become rich in the bargain. So without a second thought, the people of Shechem quickly signed up, you know, for the Bris Milah. And they didn't even think about it, you know. Yeah, we're here, you know. Just count me in, cut me in, you know. I'm ready to go. V'achash over lem shayom rishon min amilish yistar bohem me'ov. But after the first 2 days passed, and they felt this incredible pain after having the Bris Milah, and on the third day they had gotten past the initial pain sufficiently that they started thinking and rethinking about what they had just agreed to do. And they started thinking, wait a minute, we just circumcised ourselves. In other words, at that time that was considered to be a statement that you were part of the Jewish religion. So, wait a minute, we just subjected ourselves to anti-Semitism. When the nations around us become aware of the fact that we abandoned their religion, they're going to give us a hard time. They began to have regrets, and they began having bad thoughts about what they had done. What do we do to make ourselves the object of the hatred of all of our neighbors? The kasher no dar davar of Yaakov kimilasim lahay salafit na'am lios kemosam badas. Right, the whole idea for the Bnei Shechem to undergo circumcision was essentially to convert, to become Jewish. Now they're regretting it. Now they're saying, wait, we're not going to fulfill our part of the bargain. Wait, you know, we're going to actually go to war against the Bnei Yaakov. So once that word gets back to the Bnei Yaakov, Masha Asu Lahaya, Rach B'tivas HaRvachas HaKinyonim, once they realized that the only reason the Bnei Shechem did this was to gain money, V'gam Shekeis Mitzparim B'Nafsham, Machivim Eslibam Maisa Hamila, that they now regret that which they had done, right? L'chein Asu Masha Asu, right? And that's what then prompted the Bnei Yaakov to respond in the way in which they did. Ki abol harkecha hashkim lahargo. We know if someone is coming to kill, you should kill him first. V'targum koavim is male daigos. Koavim in this context means not that they were physically in pain, but they were beset by worry. Ulefizelo also Bnei Yaakov shum avel b'maisa d'shchem. So when you look at it from this perspective, all of the questions we had about how Bnei Yaakov could have acted in the way in which they did, they all disappear, because again, they're acting in total self-defense. They see what's about to happen. All of the explanations given by the Rambam, and others are not necessary, says Aksava Kabbalah, once you understand this essential idea. So you're still left with Baram's Kasha. Okay, so why did Yaakov Avinu then object? Right, Yaakov Avinu should have given them a shikayach, that they went and they saved the family. So in this version of the presentation of the Haksava Kabbalah, he doesn't address that issue. But as I mentioned, for some reason, this piece in the Haksava Kabbalah is presented twice. Each way in a slightly different way. And in the first version of this piece, he addresses this issue. He writes as follows: V'nira kimasha hodia dina haskamas anshe shchem kimuzkar b'sefer hayashar lo noda rak livnei Yaakov. The Ksava Kabbalah writes, again, it's not quite clear in the Sefer Hayashar, but he writes, when Dina sent back word to the family, that the people of Shechem had charata, they had regret, and now they're going to come and they're going to attack us and all of that, the word made it to the brothers. The word did not make it to Yaakov Avinu himself. He was still in the dark. V'gam ha'elimo milahodia b'soriz do Yaakov. And in fact, the Bnei Yaakov did not want to share this news with Yaakov. They did not want to let him know that they were going to, be attacked. Bal yosifu yagon al yagono. Right? They didn't want to make Yaakov even more upset than he already was. He was already upset about the whole incident. Right? So why make him more upset? L'chein bochicho oso masher osu. V'hochicho oso osom al masher osu. That's why when they respond, Hachizona Yasus Achoseinu, as they respond to his critique at the end of the parak, they don't say what would have been the more obvious response according to the Ksava Kabbalah. What do you mean? We saved everybody from this attack which was going to happen. They didn't want to do that because they didn't want to make him troubled by that, by sharing that news. This nekuda, the truth is, this point, which the Ksava Kabbalah himself says, again, lani zaiti is what to talk about, because it's one thing to say, first of all, it's one thing to say that they didn't want to trouble Yaakov Avinu, before they went and attacked the city of Shechem. It would have made Yaakov Avinu feel that much worse had he known that not only was his, beloved daughter raped in such a way, but that the Anshei Shechem were looking to attack the family. It would have really, thrown him for a loop. But after the Maisa, so why shouldn't they tell him? What do they gain by not telling him after the Maisa? Dad, we just, saved everybody in the family from what would have been a terrible, terrible situation. It's also, the truth is, if you look in the Sefer Ayosha, this is the Lashon in the Sefer Ayosha. So Dina sends her maidservant back to the family with the news. Vatelech hashivcho, she's reading directly from the Sefer Yasha. Vatelech hashivcho, vatagedes kol divreyem el Yaakov, v'yalbonov lemor, chozer v'chozer yoatz chidekem ve'echov aleichem. So the Sefer Yasha itself is b'teirush, it's explicit. That the shivcha, the maidservant who belonged to Dina went and told not only the brothers, she told Yaakov Avinu. So in other words, it's very interesting. The Ksava Kabbalah builds this whole pshat on the Sefer Ayosha, but if you look at the Sefer Ayosha, it's clear that Yaakov Avinu was aware of this information, right? So you're still left with a little bit of a question. I think the question is stronger than the answer that the Ksava Kabbalah gives. So maybe the answer is we have to look in the Sefer Yosha, right? And so the Sefer Yosha gives us this whole arichos about, you know, what prompted the Bnei Yaakov to do what they did. So now the onus is on the Sefer Yosha to explain why Yaakov was so upset in light of the fact that they just saved the whole family. So here's the lashon of the Sefer Yosha.
When
Yaakov Avinu saw that they had everything they had done to the city,
when
he saw the spoils that they had taken for themselves, Yaakov got very upset. Notice what gets Yaakov upset. The fact that you destroyed the city, Mela, okay, that's, you know, I understand why you did that, because they would have been a threat. They would have healed from the Bris Mila, then they would have attacked us. But once you start taking spoils from the city, so then the people from the outside look and they say, this wasn't an act of self-defense. This was just motivated by your desire to loot the city. You enter into a pact with them, and then you come home with the spoils. And, you know, you don't have the moral upper hand anymore. Now you're just a bunch of pirates who came in, you know, and took stuff that didn't belong to you. And on that, it would seem, according to the Sefer Yosha, that's what got Yaakov Avinu so upset. You know, you engaged in self-defense, Mela, but you walk home with all the booty, with all the spoils. That doesn't look good anymore.
I think there's an even stronger question from Parshas Vayechi, where Yaakov on his deathbed. It's one thing to say he didn't know what was going on at the time, he was a corrector. But he goes to his death, presumably thinking that they're guilty, and he says, "Keep up on Harguish," that they kill them because of their because of their anger.
Right.
Calculating.
Right. So in other words, you have to try to explain again. The kasha is a good kasha. You know, the reaction of Yaakov Avinu Parshas Vayishlach sounds like it's just a practical issue. You know, they're gonna now look what's gonna happen. You know, it's not a fundamental ethical moral objection to what they did. In Parshas Vayechi, however, it sounds, you know, he's just critical of their, you know, of their act, of their anger which they did. So perhaps, you know, again, just to build on the Sefer Yosha a little bit, Yaakov Avinu felt that, okay, on the one hand, they're going to get up from the Bris Mila, they're going to be a threat. I take at face value the report that they're going to attack us, you know, as soon as they're able to. On the other hand, our attacking them definitely gives ammunition to all of our enemies to attack us even further. So how do you weigh the situation? So, you know, maybe Shimon and Levi, instead of just rushing in there and, you know, killing everybody, maybe we should have had a family discussion and worked out a plan. In other words, maybe the two things go together in that fashion. It's not that your cheshbon was immoral, but your cheshbon wasn't calculated. We should have talked about this. Because there are stadim lakan and stadim lakan, you know, there are pluses and minuses to what you did. On the one hand, it was a preemptive strike, right? 667, right? It was a preemptive strike, and yet, you know, for 50 years afterwards, the rest of the world says, the Jews started up, you know, we started with the Arabs, you know, they were just these poor, defenseless, wonderful people, just, you know, when Nebuch attacked and had their land taken away from them. There are consequences. There are things that reverberate, you know, for a long time thereafter.
So I hear that Yaakov curses their anger, that they acted rashly. They should have consulted and gotten together. But think about what Yaakov's punishment is for the Shimon and Levi. He said not that you... His punishment is that you should be then spread apart in Israel. So the opposite of getting together, he's... dispersing them.
No, so I think again, and just we'll conclude with this point. I think the idea behind Parshas Vayechi is the following. I see that you, Shimon and Levi, lack the ability to really be true leaders because you don't think things through. So I'm going to scatter you so you won't have that opportunity. You'll just be regular people. You won't be able to consolidate in a leadership type position. Right, but the truth is, again, just reading Parshas Vayechi, it works out well. Orur apam ki az, right? In other words, what you did, you know, per se, I don't have an ethical or moral problem with what you did, but you did it rashly. You should have thought this one through, because you know, there was a lot of collateral damage that you did to us by what you did, and you know, people who don't think through what they're going to do and they just act impulsively are not really positioned to be leaders of Klal Yisrael. Okay, we'll have a marriage after my Be'ezus Hashem. We'll have a second vort from the Aksav HaKabbalah, Reb Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rasa HaKadosh. Okay, welcome to the second half of the Shiur on Parshas Aksav HaKabbalah, Parshas Vayishlach. So as we mentioned, the very first Shiur, Aksav HaKabbalah and Parshas Bereishis, part of the mandate of Aksav HaKabbalah is A, to connect the Aksav and the Kabbalah, in other words, to bridge the Torah Shebaal Peh with the Torah Shebiksav, in places, especially where the Torah Shebiksav and the Torah Shebaal Peh seem to not quite be on the same page, you know, to show that the Torah Shebiksav itself, when read properly, leads you to the conclusions of the Torah Shebaal Peh. And also, to justify this, he writes in his Akdama, the Ksav HaKabbalah wants to try to justify the actions of Avoseinu HaKadoshim, of our forefathers, when a simple reading of the Chumash would seem to present them in a negative light. Right? So again, we spoke about a few weeks back, Yaakov Avinu pretending that he's Esav in order to take the brachas, you know, things of that nature. Even what we just saw tonight, the actions of Shimon and Levi, which on the surface leave one with many questions about the propriety of what they did and just destroying the entire town of Shechem. You know, we want to try to find in the Chumash itself some way to justify their actions, not to walk away with an impression of Oseinu HaKadoshim that is less than stellar. So there's a second example in our Sedra which requires the Aksav HaKabbalah to focus on both of these things, bridging the Torah Shebiksav and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and also explaining and helping us shed a better light on the actions of our forefathers. And that's in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Chaf Beis. We're sort of out of the middle of nowhere. The Pasuk says, Vayelech Ruvein. Ruvein when? Vayishkav es Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv. Right? Literally, he slept with Bilhah, the concubine of his father. Vayishma Yisrael. And Yisrael heard, and presumably was very upset. The simple pshat, of course, is that Ruvein committed an act of illicit intimacy with Bilhah, with one of his father's Pilagshim, one of his father's concubines. And clearly that's, you know, an act which would lead us to view Ruvein in a very, very negative light. We know Chazal famously say, Kala Omer Ruvein Chata Eino El Atoa, that if you think that Ruvein sinned in the way in which he's described in the simple Pshat and Chumash, you're mistaken. Rather, Bilbel Yitzuei Aviv. All that he did, Rashi brings this on that Pasuk in Chumash, all that he did was that Yaakov Avinu, after the death of Rachel, had moved his bed out of the tent of Rachel into the tent of Bilhah, and Yaakov Avinu and Reuven, rather, sticking up for the covet of Leah, moved the bed of Yaakov Avinu back into the tent of Leah. So, in other words, we're not talking about any act of, you know, illicit copulation or anything of that nature. All he did was move a bed, okay? But, you know, you move a bed in a certain context, it can be described as a terrible, terrible sin, but that's what the Chumash is really talking about. Now again, we accept Chazal as a Mesorah, as a Kabbalah, but one can't help but wonder, you know, so if all he did was move a bed, you know, why is the Torah describing his activity in such terrible terms? Vayishkav es Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv. So to this, the Ksav HaKabbalah comments as follows. Amru shlochata b'shchiva mamish rak shebilbel mishkava k'mo shekosav Rashi. Chazal in Masech Shabbos, again, explain what Reuven did along the lines we just did. Rashi explains it as well. V'cheinu b'sefer Ayosha. He's a fan of the Sefer Ayosha we quoted before. The Sefer Ayosha says it also. V'nir Eli, it would seem to me, says the Ksav HaKabbalah, Hechreya miloshon hamikra ladas chazal. Right? It would seem to me that if you read the Chumash itself carefully, you'll on your own come to the understanding that Chazal come to. In other words, the very way the Torah expresses it, if you read it carefully, shows us the truth of the Torah Shebaal Peh's understanding. How is that? Ki al shchiva mamish lo shayich loshon vayelech vayishkav. Kiloshin vayelech yore al atua min apnim alachutz. Lochein lo yichubar im loshin vayishkav rak loshin bia o kima. Kimo vatovo vatishkav, vatokom vatishkav, dubenos lot. Says the Aksava Kabbalah, pay careful attention to what Reuven is described as doing. Vayelech vayishkav, he went and he slept with. Vayelech implies someone going from the inside to the outside, going out. And says the Aksava Kabbalah, if we were talking about an act of sexual intimacy, the term used would never be vayelech, but rather vayovo. He came inside. Not that he went outside. He came inside. The whole idea of shechiva in the literal sense implies going into a place that's private, that it's hidden away, that nobody sees what you're doing. That's why the term for intercourse is bia. You're coming inwards. You know, you're not going outwards. So why does it say vayelech vayishkav? So he writes, just again continuing, v'hu aroy le'in yishchivas hazivug, right, it makes sense that the term bia should be used in terms of copulation, of intercourse. Shuv b'pnimis hacheder lo b'kerev chutzos, intercourse is something that takes place in private, not in a public setting. L'chein lo shayach v'zei loshen vayelech. Vayelech, which implies he went out, certainly doesn't fit with that idea. So therefore, what does vayelech mean over here? V'lozer yeyra'e l'faresh loshen vayishkav ha'omer kan mashu hepech hakima. So, says the Aksava Kabbalah, the presence of the word vayelech indicates that the word vayishkav doesn't mean he slept with in the simple sense of the term, but rather vayishkav means he denigrated. It's the opposite of kima, which means to get up or to pick up. Vayishkav in this context means he put down, the way we say it in English, you know, he put somebody down. Kumo shaloshim kima yorel adurla v'akavod kumo make him a offer dol. Just as we find the loshim kima can be used in terms of picking someone up, elevating them, mekimi may offer dol, it doesn't mean that the poor person was literally in the dust and God picked them up from the dust. It means he elevated the person's status or spirits. That's what it means. Kocha yore loshim shchiva al hipuchom v'hu horodas habizoyon v'hashiflus. Right? So too, shchiva can mean not just lying down in a physical sense, but the person being thrown down, degraded, put down in some kinds of ways. So what does that have to do with over here? The achar sheyodanu me'edus hamikra shebilha lohoi sopi legesh liyakov kim ishto kakosu vatitein lo esbilha shivchasa le'isha. Let's pay close attention to the pasuk again, says the Aksava Kabbalah. At what point was Bila ever a pilegesh, a concubine of Yaakov? Answer, never. Right? She was the shivcha, right, of Rachel. She was the maidservant of Rachel. But when she's described as being given to Yaakov, as we had in last week's Sedra, it says Rachel gave Bila Shivchasa to Yaakov Leisha to be a full-fledged wife. A Pilegesh is not a full-fledged wife. Again, there's a difference of opinion what it means to be a Pilegesh versus being a full-fledged wife. Does it mean that there's no Kiddushin? Does it mean that there's no Ksuba? But there's something lacking. There's a difference between a Pilegesh and an Isha, a full-fledged wife. Bila from the get-go is described as being an Isha to Yaakov, not a Pilegesh. So the truth is, though, one has to ask the question, independent of what we understand that Reuven did, why does the Torah in this week's Sedra describe Bila as a Pilegesh? She wasn't a Pilegesh. She was a Shivcha to Rachel, but then she became an Isha, a full-fledged wife to Yaakov Avinu. So says the Aksava Kabbalah, Ein l'cha bizayon yoser gado milikroes o isha hanesua b'nisun gemur b'shem pilegesh v'b'chisus lo l'baylo. The truth is, if a woman is really married in a full-fledged fashion and you refer to her as a pilegesh, that's a tremendous put-down. It's a put-down to her, it's a put-down to her husband. She's not a pilegesh, she's a wife. right? Try coming home and calling your wife, you know, a concubine. It's not going to work so well. It's not going to go over so well. You may have to look for, a sofa to spend the rest of your life on, a place that's not in your house. So, v'zel l'dayti mashi yichasu rabbosenu l'cheg Reuven shebilbel yitzuei aviv. What does it mean that Reuven bilbel yitzuei aviv? You know, that he moved around the bed of his father. So again, we brought the simple the classic interpretation is that he moved the bed of Yaakov Avinu, the primary bed of Yaakov Avinu, from the tent of Bilhah into the tent of Leah. Says the Aksav HaKabbalah, maybe it means that, but maybe in addition it means something a little bit different. But who b'mashik ra'ah b'shem pilegesh la'ene kol ha'ah? Reuven went around calling Bilhah the pilegesh. He referred to her as the Pilegesh, as the concubine. And in a sense, that was the biggest put down he could possibly throw in Bilhah's direction. She's not, you know, Yaakov is making his primary bed in the tent of Bilhah? That concubine? That Pilegesh? What about my own mother? What about Leah? He put down Bilhah in that fashion. Ulefiza tam hamikra. Right? So this is how now you read the pasuk. Reuven halach vayelech Reuven. Reuven went out, and what does went out mean in this context? He went into the marketplace. He went into the public square. He went into a place where he was able to share this perspective about Bilhah. Vayivez vayored es Bilhah v'mashikra b'shem pilegesh aviv. Vayishkav, he brought down the covetous Bilhah, Pilegesh Aviv, by calling her the concubine of his father. Right? And that she wasn't, you know, he insinuated, or more than insinuated, he said that she's not really Yaakov Avinu's wife. Right? He was mevazeh her, he put her down in public, not in a private place. Until what happened? Ultimately, Yaakov Avinu himself found out. And that's in the pasuk as well. And Yisrael heard it. It's very, you know, the truth is that phrase itself, Vayishma Yisrael, is very hard to understand according to the conventional understanding of the pasuk. So Reuven went, and according to the simple understanding, he slept with Bilhah, or according to Chazal's understanding, he moved around the bed from the tent of Bilhah. Vayishma Yisrael, and Yisrael heard about it, and that's the end of the story is presented in the Chumash. Why is Vayishma Yisrael so critical? So Yisrael, okay, so Yaakov Avinu found out about it. What's the point that's being added over here? So according to the Aksav HaKabbalah, it was a bizayon to Yaakov to hear that people are calling his wife, Bilhah, his Pilegesh, his concubine. That hurt Yaakov Avinu, and for that sin, Reuven is held accountable.
The reason why he didn't want to say that he slept with Bilhah is such a terrible sin, and he will shift the car. So, okay, so he did something with the covenant of his mother, that I understand.
Took Reuven out of the frying pan into the fire. In other words, you know, the whole point is to defend Reuven. What he did is okay. It's a sin, but it's a sin bedake dakus. You know, it's a small sin. It's a sin with a lowercase s, not with a capital S. And you know, to be mevazeh Bilhah in this way is a big deal. So, first of all, let's just point out whatever you're going to say, it's still less than his sleeping with Bilhah. Is Pilegesh Aviv an erva? Yeah. In other words, anyone who, even Anusas Aviv is one of the arayas. In other words, anyone who has any any shaychus, you know, to his father in that way. It's one of the arayos. What's that? Even Anus Tassov. What's that? Yes, it's Merva. Yeah, yeah. So, but again, leaving that aside for a moment, the way I understand it is as follows. First of all, you know, according to Akhtav Akabal, I think he is sticking up for the covet of Leah, meaning Yaakov Avinu moved his tent, his bed, into Bilhah's tent. Reuven goes out to the Beis Medrash, or, you know, he goes out to the store, and he says, look, I can't understand my father. I can't understand my father. You know, okay, he had a special attachment to Rachel, but now Rachel's gone. He should have moved his bed into the tent of my mother, Leah. And where does he move the tent into? Into the tent. Where does he move the bed into? Into the tent of that Pilegesh Bilhah. Right? That's probably how it came out of his mouth. Now again, for many people, Pilegesh and Shivcha are terms that are somewhat interchangeable, and he may not have meant Pilegesh in the strict sense of the term, but rather just to say, you know, she started off life as being a maidservant, you know, she wasn't, she wasn't at the highest social status when she, originally came into the family, you know, so to speak. So, but again, it was not accurate that she was a Pilegesh, but he may have used such a term in expressing his frustration. Now, again, that's wrong, but it's a little bit more understandable. It's a sin that's worthy of the Shivtei Kah, as opposed to saying that, you know, it's something which is just so hard for us to understand how somebody of that Madrega could have done something like that in frustration. He called her a Pilegesh. Okay, she wasn't a Pilegesh. She was a Shivchot at one point in time. They're not exactly the same thing, but they're similar. You know, so he called her a Pilegesh. But the fact that he referred to her as a Pilegesh, again, we know nowadays you slip up once, you make one wrong, you say one wrong word, and it comes back to bite you forever. And that's apparently what happened. He said, you know, that Pilegesh. Vayishma Yisrael, it gets back to Yaakov Avinu that he talked in such a fashion. So it caused tremendous pain to Yaakov Avinu. So, Vine Lepirish there, Ein Vayishkav Behechlet, Kim Alpi Adibur, Kim Otsonu Kama Pa'om Shepulosim, Ein Asiyas Apulo Behechlet, Kim Alpi Adibur Levad. Right, an interesting idea which the Ksav HaKabbalah develops is that we find certain verbs in Tanakh which can be used as action verbs. They can also be used as verbs which are only true in a verbal sense. For instance, Hashem talks about the land which I gave to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, gave in this context doesn't mean a physical transfer of anything. It means, I said, I would give this land to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So similarly, Vayishkav over here doesn't mean that he slept with her b'poal. It means he did something to bring down, to lower her stature, as he explained. Now, one last point. The Karov Lomar, Shastiva Shemmen and Estarel of Azosa B'Shem Pilegesh. What caused Reuven to call her a Pilegesh? Again, it was inaccurate, right? So why do you call her a Pilegesh? Kira Osa Osa Melechus Kotsar Chayabai Sachan Yisru and Kimikera B'Osa Shivcha. Bilhah was a very humble person. She had been a Shivcha, a maidservant, before she married Yaakov, which meant she kept house and did many of the functions around the house that one would associate not with a wife but with a maidservant. And even after she became a full-fledged wife, she did all the things around the house that she had done as a shivcha. V'lo yada ki rak mitzad anvaso nuso tachzik atma ka'achas hashmochos. Reuven really thought that she was a Pilegesh. Meaning, what's the difference between a Pilegesh and an Isha? So it's a question maybe of whether there was kiddushin, question of whether there was a ksuba. Let's be honest. How would Reuven know whether Bilhah was a Pilegesh or an Isha? He wasn't there at the time of the Kiddushin, right? He didn't go through his father's papers to see if there's a ksuba. He knows that there's this woman that his father is married to. I'm not sure what her status is exactly, but I see she does an excessive amount of housework. I guess she's probably a Pilegesh, right? According to this understanding of Aksava Kabbalah, his mistake was actually really just a mistake. It wasn't Motzi Shemra, right? It wasn't intentional. He assumed she was a Pilegesh, so he complained about the Pilegesh, a chutzpah. My father is spending more time with the Pilegesh than he spends with my own mother. He thought that Bilhah had entered into an agreement where she was still doing the housework. In other words, she was a Pilegesh. Lachain kira'ah b'shem Pilegesh. Right? Therefore, he called her Pilegesh, and he quotes the Ravid in Hilchos Ishos, where the Ravid said a Pilegesh is essentially a woman who has, you know, to some extent she's a wife, to some extent she's a shivcha, right? That the Pilegesh is plag. Pilegesh is literally from the word half. She's half of this, she's half of that. She's a little bit of a shivcha, she's a little bit of an isha. So he sees Bilhah doing all of this work around the house. He says, oh, I guess she's a Pilegesh. So he uses that term in describing her. Again, a very, very interesting mahalach, a very interesting approach that the Ksav HaKabbalah takes to this issue. You can agree, you can disagree, but it certainly is a very creative way to bridge the Torah Shebiksav, the Torah Shebaalpeh, at the same time, you know, give us a rosier picture of Reuven than we might have thought by just looking at the Pashto Pshat and the Chumash.
How many beds did that have? I would think you have a bed in every tent, right?
So I guess what it means is, you know, there was something that indicated that this was the primary bed, you know, the nicest bed maybe was in you know, was in Bilhah's tent. Right, so what do you mean?
You would have a private reason to stay most of the time there.
What do you say,
Yosef and Binyamin would have been with Bilhah. It sounds like they would have had their own chamber, whatever it is. I mean, you know, again, the place where he had Tashmish with the various wives presumably was a private place. Right? So we're talking about whatever bed he used for Tashmish. So in other words, you know, it's not that he needed to be close to Binyamin and Yosef specifically, but the place that he was going to be with Bilhah was going to be more of a secluded kind of place. Okay, we'll pick up Ez Hashem next Wednesday night. Wish everybody a good Shabbos. Rabbi Hanania.